Les colloques du Collège de France.
The next speaker, Yaron Antibi from the Weizmann Institute in Israel. Thank you for coming, Yaron. Is going to talk about some interesting aspects of signaling involved in actually defining cell types. So we'll see another. So we heard, you know, the view of transcription factors encoding cell types, but of course those are also controlled by signaling pathways that help communicate among cell types. So we'll see this new dimension to the problem.
Okay. Hi, everyone. First, I want to thank Thomas for making this happen and inviting me here. And I really think I'm really excited about all the topics around information processing in biology, which is something, you know, as most of you, we probably like to spend our time thinking about. And in particularly, what I've been thinking on is the information processing within cells as they are trying to integrate and sense a lot of signals in their environment. So the cells can do many things. They can differentiate, they can proliferate or die, they can move around. And all of these behaviors, especially in complex multicellular organisms like ourselves, really need to be coordinated in a very tightly regulated manner. And we know that it can happen through extracellular signals. And throughout the last decades, these signaling pathways have really been studied extensively, but mostly focusing on one pathway at a time. And what we know is that in reality, cells are exposed to many, many different signals together. And even more confusingly, it's not that we have some signals affecting differentiation, others proliferation, etc., but rather all the same kind of usual suspects of signals appear over and over throughout development, homeostasis, and many other aspects of the biology. If we just try to count how many signals are there, we can find in mammals around hundreds of different small molecules, proteins that can be secreted and activate behaviors in target cells. But all of these hundreds of signals are somehow encoded inside the cells by an order of magnitude fewer proteins. There is really kind of a huge reductions in the degrees of freedom, in the number of dynamic variables. And that suggests that there is really some non-trivial information processing as the cells try to infer and integrate signals from the environment and encode it intracellularly. And if we want to understand the behavior of the cells, we really need to understand the information processing that occurs as the cell perceives the environment around it. So we actually know the answer of exactly how signals are encoded intracellularly, and this is the general, typical answer that we have, really kind of detailed insights about all the molecules that are involved and how they interact with really high number of data points. But when we look at these type of networks, the feeling that I get usually is confusion. It actually confuses me more than explains, because I don't really know to say what it means, what it does. And that's kind of the challenge that we're trying to face and convert this detailed biochemical information into a more questions of what is the functionality, what are the rules or principles that allows cells to sense signals from their environment. And when we look at these networks, what we started finding previously is that there is some interesting structure. There are a lot of signals, for example, that interact in many-to-many way fashion with receptors at the surface of the membrane, which transfer the signal intracellularly by activating multiple intracellular proteins. And this kind of multi-layered network that process information from an input layer through intermediate layers to an output layer with a many-to-many interaction, really kind of reminded us another type of similar network found in artificial neural networks, where we know that these types of networks with different weights or affinities on the edges can do a lot of complex, high-level signal processing. So the questions that we're asking is, do the biological signaling networks reflect some aspect of neural networks? Can they do information processing in some efficient way? Can they help the cells in making decisions? And what can we learn more when we think about the functionality that arises from these networks? And in my lab, we're trying to ask these questions both generally and also specifically in context of development or activation of the immune system. And I'm going to tell you today about a specific story that we're thinking about in the context of epithelial to mesenchymal transition. So this transition deals with epithelial cells, which tends to bind to one another, form two-dimensional layers that cover our internal organs or our skin. And as the cells undergo this process, they become more mesenchymal-like cells. They detach from the tissue, they gain motility and move around. This process is critical across many aspects of biology, including early development, in homeostasis, it's involved in wound healing, but also in disease like cancer, it really plays a significant part in cancer progression and formation of metastasis as cells spread away from the main tumor. This process is therefore highly regulated, and there are many extracellular signals that are integrated throughout this process to control its progression. And as I mentioned before, much was known about the effect of one signal as it pushes the cells to one fate, or another signal which pushes the cells to a second fate. But what we were interested in is understanding the way cells make this decision under more complex environments, and specifically what happens in this kind of confusing region. In the context of EMT, we will focus on two signals. One of them is TGF-beta. It's a strong inducer of EMT, making the cells undergo this transition. And the second signal is BMP, which actually has an opposite effect, enhancing an epithelial state for the cells. And interestingly enough, in biology, both of these signals appear together in many, many contexts, starting from the early germ layer formation during gastrulation, which is controlled by a gradient of a BMP4 signal, and the nodal signal, which is from the family of the TGF-beta ligands. And also in cancer, where both TGF and BMP are dysregulated and contributing to the progression of the cancer. So we started by just looking at the structure of the pathway. And what we can see here is that the two pathways have a similar structure. The ligands, they bind to receptors, which then activate an intracellular second messenger called SMADs. They get phosphorylated, form complexes, go to the nucleus, and control gene expression. And the two pathways have a similar structure, but they use an orthogonal set of proteins for all the different levels. However, the two pathways are not completely separated, as you can see that there are some shared resources, for example, a cofactor that both of them compete on to form the active transcription factor complexes. And there are also other cross interactions at the levels of ligands and receptors and their interactions. So our question was, can this network of interactions play a role in allowing cells to interpret contradicting information from their environment and make decisions already at the level of signal perception? And Two PhD students in my lab, Johannes and Omer, together with a senior scientist, Inbal, started tackling this problem. They looked at a cell line, NMUMG, used generally to study this process of EMT. And these cells are epithelial cells, and as we give them TGF-beta, which is the inducer. They change their morphology, change their transcriptional program, and become more mesenchymal-like. In these cells, we integrated reporters that allows us to measure the activity level of the two pathways. It's basically a synthetic construct with binding sites for the second messenger, the SMAD proteins of the BMP pathway, controlling the expression of a red fluorescent protein, and a similar construct for the TGF-beta transcription factors expressing a yellow fluorescent protein. And in this way, using flow cytometry, we can measure and quantify the activity level of each of these two pathways. So now we can start doing experiments, and we can first of all just check indeed the BMP reporter responds to BMP. It does not respond to TGF-beta and vice versa. And what we're really interested is in understanding what happens when we expose the cells to both signals together. So under the mixed conditions, we see a decrease or an interference in the activity of the BMP pathway. That kind of made sense to us because there is some shared resource that they compete, so there might be some mutual inhibition. But when we looked at the TGF-beta response, we saw that BMP, which does not activate it by itself, somehow not just not compete with it, but actually enhances the response of the TGF-beta transcription program. We thought that this might be specific for the reporter that we're using, but we also looked at the natural targets of BMP and TGF. Here's kind of the main targets of each of them, and we see the same effect also in the natural targets using the gene expression levels. So then we wanted to extend our measurement and try to see how it behaves across more conditions. To do that, we use an automated tissue culture system that we have in the lab. It's kind of a robotic system that can culture cells, treat them, pipette things in and out, generate many, many different conditions that are highly controlled and can tell us about the cell response. It can basically treat the cells all the way through actually putting them on the flow cytometer, starting measuring the results, and basically send us an email with the data. Maybe the next step is to take the data to ChatGPT and write the paper. But for now, we do that. And with this data, we can really kind of measure many, many things. For example, we wanted to see what happens with different ligands. So each pathway has many, many different variants and different ligands that it utilizes. And we can see that no matter which BMP or TGF variant we were using, we saw the same general effect that the BMP pathway is inhibited, while the TGF-beta pathway is enhanced. So this suggests that it's some kind of inherent to the pathway and does not depend on the specific identity of the ligand. We also wanted to see how general it is for other cell types, and looking at additional, completely different cells with different states, in this case, a chondrogenic cell line, show the same general behavior and crosstalk effect. We then wanted to measure the effect and map it out more systematically across concentrations. So I'll follow it slowly. We exposed the cells to increasing concentrations of BMP, showing an increasing response, similarly in the TGF-beta. And we can see that when we have only one signal at a time, we really get a completely orthogonal graded response. If we extrapolate this orthogonality, we would expect any other combination to lie on this grid. But what we actually measured was something very, very different. And particularly, we were trying to see what happens in this corner where the cell activates two distinct and somewhat opposing transcriptional program. So what we actually saw was something like this. There was kind of a deformation in the response pattern that allowed the cells to kind of get away from this confusing region and mostly activate one pathway or the other, We can also look at it a bit differently. So here we plot the concentration of each signal. The green color represents a TGF-beta response. The red color represents a BMP response. This is interpolated data assuming no crosstalk. And what we measured experimentally is that this result, where we really see that the space splits into distinct regimes where either the BMP or the TGF-beta is active, but not both of them together. So we saw this effect at the level of the response, the immediate kind of response of the pathway, the way that the cells perceive this information. But we also wanted to see, to ask whether this actually has an effect on the decision of the cells to really undergo this transition or not. So to try and get into that, we looked at the transcriptional response by doing RNA sequencing and identified, using a PCA analysis, the kind of main directions, the first principal component that distinguishes between the different conditions. This allowed us to generate an EMT score. And indeed, most of the genes that were relevant for these directions were genes that are known to play part in EMT and characterize mesenchymal cells. So with this score, we were looking at the transcriptional program that is generated by our cells. And indeed, while BMP didn't generate any activity of this program, together with TGF, it allowed an enhanced response, an enhanced EMT initiation. Looking at a later time point, we were also staining different markers of EMT. When there was no ligand added, we were able to see E-cadherin, which is a marker of an epithelial cells, and a general structure of the actin measured using phalloiding staining. Adding TGF-beta at very low levels did not change that. Okay, so we used a level that is below a level that actually induces EMT. But adding to this low level another amount of BMP, we're able to push the cells through it. We saw loss of E-cadherin and a formation of a stress fiber from the actin filaments and general changes in the morphology and the density of the nuclei. So overall, we see that the BMP and TGF has an anti-symmetric crosstalk between them, and that the crosstalk is general across ligands, concentrations, and it actually affects the cellular decisions to undergo EMT. But the next question we had is, what about the mechanism? What can cause this asymmetric effect? We went back to the structure of the network, and we said that it might arise from two different levels of this pathway. Upstream, the binding of the ligands to the receptors, or downstream, somewhere in the way that the SMAD proteins activate the target genes. To check where it lies, we focused on this layer of activated SMAD proteins and measured the phosphorylation level. And we found that actually there is no difference between a mixed condition and a single ligand, so that adding TGF-beta did not decrease the phosphorylation level of the BMP SMAD proteins, and adding BMP4 did not enhance the TGF-beta related messengers. That meant that the effect we saw arises downstream from the way that the transcription factors form and activate the genes. So we focused on that part and generated a mathematical model based on the biochemical binding-unbinding equations describing the phosphorylation of the SMAD proteins, the formation of the transcription factor complexes, and the initiation and control of the transcriptional response. Now, I'm not going to get into all the details of the model, but the main thing that you should know about it is that it completely does not work. Okay? We try to play with all the parameters, and you know, as expected, we basically have some competition on a shared resource, and it can only generate a mutual inhibition. No matter we try to change, you know, any parameters in the model, we were only confined to a very limited range of inhibition. So we were kind of scratching our heads, what to do next? Should we throw this model to the trash? And before doing that, we tried to play and just add different additional interactions and see what they do. And we found that if we allow a formation of kind of a heteromeric complex that contains a SMAD protein from the BMP pathway with a SMAD protein from the TGF pathway, this opens up the door to much more general responses, including things that are similar to what we measure experimentally, which have an inhibition and synergy in an asymmetric pattern. So that kind of made us understand that if we want to see how this is controlled, we can look at the formation of this heteromeric complex. And indeed, in the model, as we change the affinity of formation of this complex, if the affinity is very low, the complex is not formed, and the two pathways can be simultaneously activated, generating a range of responses that are ambiguous, where the cell might not clearly activate in a very strong way. Increasing the affinity slowly separates the response space into the two regimes, and generating a more deterministic way for the cells to respond in a more controlled, robust fashion across bigger range of the environmental conditions. So with that, we wanted also to get some intuition about how does this effect work. So we can think about what happens when we only expose the cells to BMP signal. Some SMAD proteins are phosphorylated, form complexes, bind the corresponding gene promoters, and control the activity of the target genes. Similarly for TGF-beta only. When we have both signals together, the phosphorylation and activation of the SMAD mediator is the same, but now we can also form heteromeric complexes, and the heteromeric complexes could bind either the green or the red target genes. But if we live in a regime of parameters where the affinity to the red to the green targets is stronger, then the heterodimer would spend more time on activating TGF-beta genes and less time activating BMP genes, and that would generate a decrease inhibition of the BMP program and enhancement of the TGF program. So this intuition allows us to explain some mechanism for the measurements that we measure. And it also generates two important implications. First, these heterocomplex should be in the cell and we should be able to find them, especially under mixed conditions. And second, the SMAD1 should be recruited away from its targets and more to targets of the SMAD2, which are the SMADs that belongs to the TGF-beta pathway. Okay, so we should be able to see these two effects. And then we went back to the experimental system to try and see whether we can really measure that. So we used proximity ligation assay, which allowed us to use antibodies for the two parts of the complex and measure fluorescence when these two proteins are in a stable complex together. And we really saw that indeed under mixed condition, we get a significantly higher fluorescent signal indicating the formation of these mixed complexes. We then used the CHEC-seq to measure the binding of the SMAD1, which is the BMP SMAD, to either its own motifs or to the motifs known for SMAD2, which is a TGF-beta motif. We saw that indeed mixed condition in purple reduces the binding of SMAD1 to its own motif and enhances the binding of SMAD1 to the motifs of SMAD2. indicating that really it's been kind of relocated to this TGF-beta loci on the genome. So with that, let me summarize. We saw first experimentally that BMP and TGF-beta show some asymmetric crosstalk that is biased toward TGF-beta transcriptional program. We systematically analyzed it and found that there is this crosstalk enables a reduced ambiguity in this, at the level of intracellular activity, even when the extracellular conditions are as ambiguous as we can make them. And using modeling, we were able to decipher a mechanism that allows this type of crosstalk and experimentally validated different predictions from the model. So with that, I want to thank the people in the lab, especially in Bal, Johannes, and Omer, and thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.